This is the Quality News Network. President Bush today, as expected, vetoed the bill which would provide health insurance to more than 10 million children, up from the current 6.6 million. He said it moves the country's health care system, quote, in the wrong direction, end quote. More negotiations between Congress and the White House are expected. Congress may pass legislation that closes a loophole which allows private security contractors in Iraq, such as Blackwater, to be immune to criminal prosecution. The private security forces protect State Department personnel in Iraq. The Polish ambassador to Iraq was wounded in an attack in central Baghdad today. His convoy was targeted by several bombs in what is being called an assassination attempt. Poland has about 1,000 troops in Iraq. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will travel to the Middle East again next week ahead of the U.S.-hosted peace conference in November. She will go to Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and possibly other neighboring Arab countries. Former President Jimmy Carter was blocked from visiting a Darfur refugee camp by Sudanese forces. He got into a shouting match with them. According to a joint six-nation statement, by the end of this year, North Korea has agreed to a deal to dismantle all of its nuclear facilities. In return, the communist government will receive 950,000 metric tons of fuel, oil, or economic aid. In Myanmar, a UN worker and three of her family members were taken in an early dawn government raid. It is part of the security crackdown against demonstrators. The Associated Press reports that next week the U.S. government will conduct the largest terrorism exercise so far. It will consist of three imaginary dirty bombs going off in two major U.S. cities and Guam. Investigators will try to determine how five workers were killed in a Georgetown, Colorado hydroelectric plant accident yesterday. They initially survived the chemical fire but died before rescuers could reach them 1,000 feet below ground. Virginia Republican Senator John Warner is said to be doing well after a non-surgical procedure to regulate his heartbeat. The 80-year-old lawmaker will remain in the hospital overnight. He is expected to resume his Senate work next week. And in La Jolla, California, a landslide this morning has buckled streets and sent at least one home down a hillside. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Tired of all the griping? Got to get away from the propaganda of the left and the right? Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific right here on the Quality News Network for America Back on Track with me, your correspondent, Tony Seaton. We don't wallow in the dialectic between the donkeys and the elephants. America Back on Track rises above the fray, representing the people's right, the people's need to know. America Back on Track from the Quality News Network puts the news in context, delivers scintillating interviews and commentary, all part of a conversation with America. America Back on Track is for information-hungry Americans who know how vital it is to the health of the country that the citizens know the facts. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Government data shows that in August, nearly 30% of flights were delayed. There was also an increase in customer complaints about the airlines. Last week, President Bush said he would address the problem with the air carriers. A judge in Pennsylvania has ruled that about 125,000 Walmart workers who already won a $78.5 million class action suit award will get another $62 million in damages. That amount equals to about $500 per employee for working off of the clock. The U.S. Postal Inspection Service announced that there have been 77 arrests recently as part of an international crackdown on email scams involving phony lottery wins or inheritances. Microsoft has introduced three new models of its digital media player Zune, which is a rival to the Apple iPod. 100 million iPods have been sold since 2001. Microsoft has sold just over 1 million Zune models since it was introduced last year. Gold is trading at $735.70 an ounce. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $79.94 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And taking a look at Wall Street near today's close, the Dow Jones is down 80 points at 13,967. The NASDAQ down 18 points and the S&P 500 down 7. There's always more at our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Today is Debate Wednesday. I'm bringing on my favorite Republican, and hopefully yours too, Mike Lane, the Republican strategist who has his own company that tries to tell Republicans what to do. I'll be bringing him on in the latter half of the hour and give y'all a chance to take him on. I know many of the times I have him on my television show on Sundays, which is replayed here on Mondays, so a lot of y'all have heard him but not had a chance to challenge him, and I want to encourage you to do so. There are a lot of things to challenge him on. He is prepared. We'll see how good a job he does. But definitely feel free to bring on the SCHIP program, State Children's Health Insurance Program, that we've talked about so much here, or Clarence Thomas, for that matter. He's ready for that. He's always ready to take on the war in Iraq. And one of the things I want to challenge him on that score is whether or not there really is a military solution to Iraq at all, because all the experts say the only thing is a political solution. Two more topics that I will address with him, and I encourage you to do so as well. One is, of course, Blackwater, the military contractor that, like all military contractors, seems to be beyond U.S. and Iraqi law, paid billions of dollars in your taxpayer money, and doing so without virtually any oversight. We'll talk about Blackwater. The other thing I want to talk about is something that, well, you should know about if you don't, if you haven't been reading about it, and that's the Inside Scoop on Pakistan. I think there's a lot going on there. Some is horrific. Some is actually promising. And we need to be watching Pakistan, because now that the Taliban is mostly out of Afghanistan, they are setting up a new territory in a country that's far more dangerous than Afghanistan, and certainly far more dangerous than Iraq, which was never that much of a danger at all. A country that already has nuclear weapons and is a dictatorship, but one that hopefully is teetering on the verge of democracy. So I want to talk at length about Pakistan. All right, so let me go through. We'll talk about this half hour, all the different things before Mike gets on, and then when he comes on, we can challenge him with it. Let's start, though, with the situation in Pakistan, because I think that totally apart from debating Republicans, this is something all Americans need to be concerned about. When you look at the world's nuclear powers, you have, of course, three democracies. Of the five Security Council members, permanent members that have nuclear weapons, we'll start with them. Three are democracies. That would be England, France, and the United States. Two are definite dictatorships, Russia and China. But they're relatively stable dictatorships. Russia, of course, is an interesting example because it was a democracy, kind of, sort of. When the Soviet Union failed, Boris Yeltsin brought that country very close to democracy. They did have fair elections. Now I'm afraid it's slipping back toward dictatorship, and of course I've been very careful to be watchful of this most powerful country, Russia, and we should be, because I think Putin is taking its country back toward dictatorship. So I don't know that I'll call Russia a dictatorship yet. Let's just say it's somewhere in between dictatorship and democracy. The one thing I think it is, though, is stable. Although Russia may well pose a danger to its own citizens and may eventually pose a danger to the world, right now I don't see it as a major threat. China, of course, is also a stable dictatorship, certainly poses a danger to its own people. We know about Tiananmen Square. Those rulers are still in power. But I think it's concentrated mostly on beating us economically, which they're doing a good job of doing, but not so much on military might. So then we look at the nuclear powers that are not part of the Big Five. And there are four. Three of them are stable democracies. Those three are India, Israel, and South Africa. South Africa, of course, used to be an apartheid government, but now is a stable democracy. Israel is a stable democracy, and India is a stable democracy. For all its poverty, you have to give India credit for being a stable democracy for some 60 years. So there's really only one country left with nuclear power that's unstable, and it is Pakistan. And due to our war in Afghanistan, which I'm not knocking, I supported that war, but due to our war in Afghanistan, we chased al-Qaeda, which was controlling the Afghani government, to Pakistan. And then we left the chase. We decided to focus on a far lesser threat in Iraq. We put 16 times the troops in Afghanistan in Iraq. We didn't follow them into Pakistan. And so al-Qaeda is growing in power in Pakistan. We didn't chase them in. Pakistan, Musharraf, the dictator of Pakistan, who did a coup d'etat some years back. You may recall that Musharraf was the leader that George W. Bush, as a candidate, didn't know his name when they asked him who the leader of Pakistan was. He failed that test. And he clearly doesn't know a lot about Pakistan. Not many Americans do, but it's very important to know about it. And not just because it is the country where almost certainly Osama bin Laden and his ilk have taken up residence. But Pakistan is arguably the greatest hope and the biggest danger at the same time to the United States and to world peace. One thing we do know is that after we failed at Tora Bora, and by the way, every indication is we could have gotten Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora if we had just expended a few more troops there. Bush didn't want to do it, despite the fact that he was practically begged to do it. So we let Osama bin Laden go into Pakistan, and he's been building up forces there. We really haven't been fighting him hard. Musharraf, in fact, declared a truce with the militants there, the terrorists there. And I think that shows the danger of ever declaring a truce with people who are out to destroy you. We know that the people in Pakistan, the al-Qaeda groups in Pakistan, want to overthrow the Pakistani government and make it into what they made Afghanistan into, a theocratic Islamo-fascist, if you will, but strict Islamic country, strict dictatorship, where women particularly are persecuted, but not just women, gay people, certainly non-Muslims, certainly anyone who would dare be against a strict Islamic rule. And they've made their intentions clear. But they were willing to accept a truce, which in Arabic is called a hudna. It's the same word that Hamas sometimes uses when describing what they'll deal with Israel. After shooting thousands of missiles into Israel, they say they'll accept a truce, a hudna. But a truce, my friends, a hudna is not a peace treaty. It is merely a chance to sit, to gather up strength, to be more powerful again. It is like what Hitler agreed to in 1938. It is a pause. It is a rest. It is not peace. It is a way to build up troops. And we should never accept such a truce with al-Qaeda. We learned it was wrong when Chamberlain did it with Hitler. We certainly, Israel would be wrong to have a truce with Hezbollah or Hamas. When they do that, they just build up power. And we've learned that in Pakistan, it's a bad idea. In Pakistan, during that truce, al-Qaeda regrouped, they reorganized, they allowed themselves, not being chased anymore, to get high training, and now they're bigger and badder and stronger than ever. And then, just the other day, they decided they'd had enough of the truce, they unilaterally called it off. And in fact, they now have 250 Pakistani soldiers in their hostage, in their care, a prisoner of war, whatever you want to call it. They've executed some of them, so it's hardly prisoner of war. The point is that al-Qaeda is stronger than ever in Pakistan, and yet Pakistan has its own political crisis that I want to talk about after the break. The toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Thank you. We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap. There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes. Somebody's trying.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real, but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. As I said, Mike Lane, my worthy opponent, will be calling in sometime in the next 15 minutes or so. Before then, I just want to give you a little facts about what's going on in Pakistan, and then I want to move on to Blackwater and then move on to Mike. I've given you the bad news about Pakistan. Let me give you the good news. The good news is that I see some hope. I see some hope in the fact that General Musharraf, who is our ally but is also a dictator, is moving toward democracy in Pakistan. If Russia is moving in the wrong direction, Pakistan's moving in the right direction, largely because an independent court has said that he has to, and that's being respected. They've told him he can't be president and army chief any longer, and he's giving up army chief, doing so to a close ally of the United States in the West, General Kiani. And more importantly, he's allowing former Prime Minister Bhutto to come back. She had ruled she'd been Prime Minister of Pakistan twice before, and she is also a moderate Western leader, but someone who firmly believes in democracy for Pakistan. And my hope is that she's someone, as she comes to power, that can help Pakistan transition to a country that's firmly fighting Al-Qaeda, but at the same time is acting more democratically. part of our problem in the region has always been that we've been supporting dictators that are our friends but are no friends to their own people. Saudi Arabia and Egypt immediately come to mind. So he's running for re-election, Musharraf, and I'm sure he's put his thumb on the scales. But by bringing back Bhutto, and maybe it's just that I don't know of any vicious female dictators. Maybe someone can think of one. But somehow I think with a woman in charge, Pakistan will calm down a bit. Hopefully, if the government treats its people well, they won't be turning to places like Al-Qaeda. So I wanted to end on an up note. But we should always watch Pakistan. It is a nuclear power. For all our concerns about Iran getting nuclear weapons, which I think are legitimate, and even Europe is supporting us on that, we need to be concerned about a country that already has nuclear weapons, the only one outside of China and Russia that is a dictatorship, and we need to watch it very carefully. If Al-Qaeda got control of Pakistan, that, my friends, would be more severe than anything, than Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan or anything else. Let me move on and talk about Blackwater just before Mike comes on the air, because I think some of you may want to challenge him on that. Many of you saw the hearings yesterday. One of the nice things about the Democrats in power is we can hold hearings where we actually ask questions of military contractors. For 6 years, of course, you were not allowed to ask any questions about what goes on in our government. It was assumed, Congress assumed that its role was to simply say yes, sir, to the president and to go and raise a lot of money. Well, the Blackwater CEO, Eric Prince, came in and he kind of answered questions with a sneer. I guess he knows something that we don't know. In fact, I know he knows something that we don't know. He was asked how much of the $1 billion in federal contracts that Blackwater gets each year do they make in profits? Seems like a fair question. Prince's response, quote, "We're a private company," and that's a key word there, private, unquote. In other words, I ain't going to tell you. Just because you give me $1 billion doesn't mean you have a right to know how much profit I'm making. Sorry, taxpayers. We could be putting half of that in our pockets. You'd have no right to know. You know, I don't know. If I were getting $1 billion from someone and they wanted an accounting, I'd think that they should get one. After all, they're giving me $1 billion. No, not Eric Prince, because he understands that for far less than $1 billion, he can buy off a lot of politicians. For example, Tom Davis of Virginia, he gave $717,000 to. Seems like a lot of money, and it is for a political candidate, but it's less than $1 million, less than a thousandth of what the taxpayers gave to them. And his view of Blackwater, quote, "We should take care not to prejudge." John Micah of Florida, who gets $145,000 from Blackwater, said, "We should not be holding this hearing. Therefore, I move that the committee do adjourn." He is very good to the Republicans. His father helped to bankroll the religious conservative. His sister is a big Republican fundraiser. And he himself personally has given $236,000 to Republican candidates. In fact, he gave $1 million to the people on the very committee that gives oversight to him, 83% of it to Republicans. The chairman, Henry Waxman, said Blackwater will be held accountable today. He only received $6,000 from all defense contractors combined over the past 17 years and probably won't be getting a lot more after that. But I like Henry Waxman. I like the questions that were asked. I don't like Prince's answers. They asked him about the crash of a Blackwater plane that federal investigators said the pilots acted unprofessionally. "Accidents happen," says Prince. They asked about the drunken Blackwater guard who shot and killed a security guard to an Iraqi vice president. "We can't flog him," Prince said with a grin. High wages, no explanation. Quote, "They're not showing up at the job naked," unquote. So Prince was having a really good time. He was really enjoying not answering these questions. But when you have a company, a so-called private company, kill 11 Iraqis, and if they're just private, and if there's no oversight, then why aren't we trying the people who killed them for murder? I mean, here's the point. If they're acting like military, they need to be under military command. They need to be under congressional oversight. And if they really are a private company, then you know what? No immunity. No immunity. We need to find out what happened. I'm glad that they're asking the questions. I'm not glad that he's not giving the answers. And I think we really have to be very careful about our military contractors. It's not just Blackwater, of course. It's Halliburton. It's Kellogg Brown Root. We talked a couple days ago about the enormous pay they get compared to the people in our military. So when Mike Lane comes on, I hope that you will challenge him on this as well. And while you're there, ask him questions about Iraq. Mike will go on and on about the surge and how it can work and all those kinds of things. But what's interesting is that virtually everyone in the military, and this includes General Petraeus, has said that it ain't the military that's doing what needs to be done in Iraq. The only success they've had is in Anbar province. And the only reason they've had that success is for political reasons, not military reasons. Basically, the Sunni tribesmen there, the same ones who've been planting bombs under American soldiers, decided they didn't want al-Qaeda ruling them. So they decided to turn against al-Qaeda. But basically what we're doing in Iraq is we are training Sunni extremists and training Shia extremists at the same time as we're fighting al-Qaeda, Sunni extremists, and fighting Iran, Shia extremists. And then they use that knowledge against us. We are facing a classic blowback situation that has harmed the United States for decades. Right? I mean, we armed Osama bin Laden to fight the Soviets. And now it's come back to bite us. We armed Marcos, came back to bite us. We armed Noriega. We armed Saddam Hussein. We armed Iran, even. We armed all our enemies. And now we're doing exactly the same. We're actually arming both sides, both the Shia and the Sunni in Iraq, both preparing for a massive civil war fought with U.S. arms and U.S. training. And about the only thing stopping the civil war is our troops sitting there in the middle like sitting ducks being killed in the crossfire. And they know that when we leave, they'll have all the opportunity to shoot each other. Terrific. But what are we achieving? What are we achieving? On that, I don't think anyone has an answer. But Mike Lane will try to answer that question. You'll hear him spin and spin away, and that's one of the reasons why I invite Republicans on the air, so you can hear their spin, and you can hear me and you counteract their spin. So if you want to give a call, Mike Lane should be on after this break. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Go ahead, take him on. Challenge me if you like. That's what talk radio is all about. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. surprise.
Head on radionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest now is Mike Lane. He is the president of Intelligence Strategies. It is his job to give good intelligence to the elephants, to the Republican Party. And he's he's certainly been my most frequent guest on the Inside Scoop, precisely because though I disagree with him on most things, at least he disagrees in a fairly agreeable fashion. Mike Lane, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, you're damaging my reputation by calling me agreeable, please.
I know, you're disagreeable, but doing so in an agreeable manner. Let me start with the Blackwater hearings. Did you see any of that yesterday?
You know, I did not catch the hearings, but I certainly read enough about it to know what was going on.
Well, let me ask you this. How much should Blackwater answer congressional questions? One of the questions that CEO Eric Prince was asked is how much of the $1 billion he gets a year does Blackwater take in profits? And he responded, quote, "We're a private company, and there's a key word there, private," unquote. Should Blackwater have to tell Congress how much of they make in profits?
You know, unless it's written into the contract that it would be a cost-plus kind of thing so you can figure out exactly what the net profit or gross profit on any given operation or contract would be, the answer is that, the IRS will find out when they file their tax return, but Congress has seen fit to legislate that as a private matter. So I would imagine that until Congress changes the law, they're not entitled to it.
Shouldn't we change the law then? Shouldn't we make contracts where we have a right to know how much people are making in profits when they get $1 billion in taxpayer money? I mean, I thought Republicans used to care about wasteful spending. Don't you think we should know if they're pocketing half of it?
Well, I think what we need is good contracting sources, Mark, so that we make sure that we are giving contracts to the companies that can do a good job at a fair price. Now, in the case of Blackwater, as most Americans know, there's almost no other company in the world that can do what they do. They've got more or less the lion's share of the market. They're very good at what they do. Ask any civilian or any State Department employee over in a war zone who they would most rather have protecting them, and the answer will come out 100% of the time, a Blackwater security guard.
I'll tell you what, let me suggest to you an institution that is better than Blackwater, that does a better job than Blackwater, does so more carefully, does so cheaply, and does so with more oversight. It's called the United States Military. And I would venture to you that they can do everything that Blackwater does, do so at a cheaper price, and do so with more concern for rules and regulations.
Well, you know, Mark, they can do some of it. They can't now because, of course,
we're overstretched.
The personnel available is not sufficient, and the Democrats, of course, are trying to even cut the number of people we have over there, which would make it even more difficult for them to do it. But some of the stuff, if we had an Army or a Marine Corps that was twice the size of what it is now, some of that stuff could be done in terms of physical protection of facilities, physical protection of compounds, protection of buildings. But the personal protection, the bodyguard protection of people that, you know, both civilians and State Department people and things like that who are going from place to place, that's something that the military is not trained in, and they would resist actually being asked to do that particular kind of job. Mark, you there? Hello.
Then Blackwater, which after all has to make a profit. Oh, we lost Mike. Did we lose him? I'm sure he will call back. Sorry about that. My point to Mike is that everything that Blackwater does some government can do, and they can do so more cheaply, and they can do so more efficiently, and more importantly, they have to follow rules and regulations. I assume that Mike will call back. I don't think he hung up on me. I think just something happened and we lost him, but I assume he'll come back. I also want to ask him about Iraq and Pakistan. Folks, if you want to call in and challenge Mike, you're encouraged to do so. Toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I'll wait till Annie says that that Mike is back on the air for us. But, you know, it's the kind of thing, it's so typical of Republicans to say that, oh, well, you know, no one does it better than this private corporation that happens to give all this money to Republican politicians, and no one can do it, and the government can't do it. Hogwash. The same Republicans that attack Democrats for supposedly not supporting our troops, you heard Mike's comment, oh, well, the Democrats don't want enough people there. They're attacking our troops right now when they say, in effect, that they can't do the job. I think they can. In fact, I know they can. And I also know that the people in the military who perform the job are quite upset at people like those in Blackwater who earn a good deal of money and at the same time don't have the oversight, don't have the code of military justice, don't have the other things. So I'm going to take a quick break, give Mike a chance to call back in, give you a chance to call back in. Toll-free number 877-443-2366. Right back after this.
You missed Strictly Confidential last week. You missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed Lesbian Bible Study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to. From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is Mike Lane. Mike, what happened there?
Technology is somewhat imperfect still in the 21st century, but it's good to be back with you.
Okay, well, I'm glad to have you back. Let me just ask you this sort of philosophical question. It's a broader question than Blackwater. And Republicans used to pride themselves on being the party against fiscal irresponsibility. They wanted to cut wasteful spending. They used to say that's what they really cared about. Doesn't it make sense for the government to be doing military things rather than hiring out to a private company that's not only making excess profits that the government doesn't have to make, but also doesn't have the oversight that we have over government, military people, so that they're not doing crazy stuff like accidentally killing 11 civilians or sending in a different military contractor example, 4 people to Fallujah who shouldn't have been there and starting a whole war. Wouldn't this stuff be better done by the military?
Well, there are certain aspects that could be done by the military, as we were discussing before we lost the connection. And, you know, if the military was 25, 30, 50% larger than it is, we would have the troops available to perform those functions. But as long as we are where we are today, October 4th, I guess it is, or October 3rd in 2007, we don't have the trained people in the military. We don't have the ability to send them over there. And there are certain security functions that need to be performed. Blackwater stepped up to the plate. They offered the government the opportunity to use them. The government looked at it and said, yes, we need them. And before you accuse them of making totally obscene profits, and I think we could all intuitively agree they're pretty high, remember that the individual contractors who are over there risking their lives on behalf of America and the State Department and contractors who are trying to rebuild Iraq, those guys are all making about $200,000 a year. So it's not necessarily that it's all going into the pocket of Blackwater Inc. They're paying their employees very well, and they're paying their employees well because they die. I think the hearings brought out that 30 Blackwater security contractors have already died in action over there in Iraq.
But how do you think an American soldier feels about that? I mean, here, a single American soldier is making some 60 to 80 grand if they're married and they're a sergeant and they're well up there. They might make it the highest, 170,000. How do you think people in the military feel who join up, who frankly risk their lives more than the Blackwater people do, work harder, work longer hours, don't have the freedoms that the Blackwater people do, and they're making much, much less? I mean, if we're going to pay out 200 grand or 300 grand, or I read somewhere that for the senior officials, it can be as high as 400 grand to individuals there at Blackwater, maybe we should raise the pay of our soldiers, sailors, and airmen, get more people to join the military so that we don't need Blackwater.
Well, you know, as I said, Mark, if our military was larger, we could do that. I don't think the problem is retaining our good people. Our reenlistment rates are generally pretty high, particularly for people over in the theater. They don't want to go home. They want to stay there with their units, and they reenlist. So the pay of the soldiers is not so much at issue as it is the size of the military. We're going to have to add another perhaps 100,000, 150,000 people to the active duty military force. And that would cost a whole bunch of money. That's
but it'd be cheaper than
Blackwater. It's permanent, unlike Blackwater, which is a temporary security situation. And also, I think most
it's
of the soldiers
realize that
99% of the Blackwater security contractors are former military just like themselves. So I don't think they begrudge their fellow comrades in arms very much on this particular issue.
Well, I know a lot of veterans begrudge Blackwater, and it wouldn't be permanent. We have tours of duty that are not supposed to be permanent. They're supposed to be a year. Now, I realize that the Republicans want to make them permanent, but Jim Webb and some Republicans and just about all the Democrats are saying, in effect, that after 12 months or 15 months or at the longest 18 months, that our men and women in arms need to have a break. They need to come home. So this isn't supposed to be permanent. But the harder question is one of oversight. These people work for us. They work for the American people. They work for the American government. And yet Eric Prince goes in there and with a smug smile basically says, I don't have to answer your questions. It also, let me ask you this.
He doesn't have to answer questions on how profitable his company is. I mean, the Congress did pass a law that says tax returns are private. And, you know, unless they're a public company where they have to file reports like that, as he said, the key word here is private.
But they work for us. This isn't an example of a private corporation that's working for private people. They work for us. We have a right to know how much we're spending. I mean, if I hire a contractor on my house, okay, he may not have to go public with how much his profit is, but if I want to know how much he's making in terms of a condition of hiring him, I have that right to know. And my concern is it's not just a matter of profits. When they kill people, they basically are saying that they are exempt from Iraqi law, even though they're a private company, and they're exempt from American military law as well. Apparently, they're exempt from all law.
No, they're not exempt from all law. They can be prosecuted by the Justice Department if they do something that's considered to be a crime.
How? They're not doing it on American soil. I mean, I think there's a real problem here. I mean, in Abu Ghraib, and admittedly nobody was punished for that because I think they didn't want to look higher up to the people who had ordered it, but at least people can be punished. under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Blackwater, if Congress doesn't give oversight of them, and the Pentagon isn't giving oversight of them, who's supposed to be watching these people?
Well, I certainly think that the Pentagon should be providing oversight, because that's who their contract is with, is the Pentagon. And so they should have oversight there, and they should have standards. And it would surprise me if there are not performance standards written into their contract that the Pentagon reviews and should be enforcing. Now, if they're not, I'll go along with you 1,000%. The Pentagon needs to have performance standards and needs to enforce them. But
so
just
Congress
because you
now
and I are not privy to the classified information as to what those performance standards are and how they're being enforced doesn't mean that they're not there.
So Congress now needs to bring the Pentagon before hearings and ask the generals question of why aren't you watching these people better?
You know, if Congress chose to do that, that would certainly be within their prerogative.
Let me ask you this.
Thinks it has bigger fish to fry than Blackwater.
Blackwater apparently killed 11 Iraqis in Baghdad last month. All indications are, and I certainly wasn't there, but all indications are that these were innocent people. Who are they responsible to? Iraq? To America? Who is going to check out whether innocent civilians were killed by our military contractor?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be an investigation by both our Department of Defense, for whom Blackwater works, and also by the Iraqi government. So we should have two reports that come out. The one from DOD, I doubt would be classified. We'll probably see what it is, although parts of it may be redacted. But the one conducted by the Iraqi government will more than likely be entirely public. I look forward to seeing that one as well.
Let's say that someone at Blackwater made a horrible, horrible error and incompetently led to the deaths of these 11 civilians. Eric Prince was asked, for example, about the 2004 crash of a Blackwater plane in Afghanistan, where federal investigators, like the investigation that you're talking about is going to happen, they said the pilots acted unprofessionally. Prince's response, quote, accidents happen, unquote. They asked him about a drunken Blackwater worker who shot and killed a security guard to an Iraqi vice president. He responded, quote, we can't flog him, unquote. So what these glib answers are showing me, in effect, is no one's responsible.
Well, Mark, here's the problem. You're going to have dirtbags in any section of life that you look for.
They should be punished. That's my point. They should be punished. If people kill somebody, even negligent homicide is a crime. It's a crime in America, and you go to jail for it if you accidentally kill somebody. It's called criminal negligence, and if it's intentional, obviously that's worse. That's murder. My point is that Blackwater should be held at least to the same standards that our men and women under arms are held to, the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Well, the Uniform Code of Military Justice is set up exactly to be that, something that applies only to the people in uniform. I think Congress would scream it was a violation of the entire world's civil rights if you tried to apply the Uniform Code of Military Justice to anybody who was not in uniform. It's just not something that applies to people who are not in uniform, and it would be a gross violation of civil rights all the way around if they tried that.
And my point is there's virtually no justice applied to these people. Virtually no one is watching them. He's basically telling Congress to butt out. And the Pentagon, let me suggest to you, it ain't watching them either, but they have other incompetence problems. Let me move on and talk a little bit about Pakistan here. Because there's a really amazing article in today's Washington Post that's mostly scary and a little bit hopeful. The little bit hopeful part, I think, is going on politically. If Prime Minister Bhutto comes back, my hope is that that actually is some hope. I have a lot of respect for her. But the scary part is that because of the truce that Pakistan had with al-Qaeda terrorists in North and South Waziristan, by all indications, they are more powerful than ever before. They are as powerful or more powerful than they were when they ran Afghanistan. They've got training, they've got better tactics, they've got better weapons, and they now have taken over not just the Pakistani countryside, but are threatening the cities. They've made no secret of the fact they'd like to overturn the Pakistani government, which, as you know, Mike, and my listeners know, has nuclear weapons. Is it a mistake that we've concentrated so much on Iraq and we have concentrated very little on Pakistan?
Well, you know, it's two different types of operations, Mark, and I think your listeners know this, but I'll review it very briefly. You know, the kind of war that you fight in a place like Baghdad or Iraq in the desert is entirely different kind of war than you fight in the mountains of Afghanistan or in the mountains of Pakistan. The Russians learned this the hard way. They got their butts kicked all over Afghanistan, and they had to go home with their tail between their legs, you know, beaten by a third-rate power in the mountains of Afghanistan, because they committed conventional forces and conventional warfare to an area where it just did not apply. We don't want to make that mistake that the Russians made, or we'll come home with our tail between our legs. This is a special forces operation. We've consistently maintained up to 15,000 special forces in the Afghanistan, Pakistani theater, looking for...
Well, hold on. Pakistani theater.
So
are you
far,
saying
we've been very lucky, and he hasn't been found, and probably with some of the help of some Pakistani officials, although I doubt from Musharraf himself, and it remains to be seen how long it'll take us to catch him and what kind of future support we will continue to get from Pakistan. But we really don't want to put more than about 15,000 special forces in there, or else we'll be falling into the same trap that the Russians did.
Now, Mike, you said 15,000 in the Afghani-Pakistani theater. I wasn't sure if you were being a little clever there. I am aware of 15,000 or so troops in Afghanistan. Are you saying we have thousands of troops in Pakistan? Is that what you're saying? Because I'm not aware of that.
I don't know that for a fact. The exact troop locations are, of course, as we all know, classified. But I would be surprised and appalled if we hadn't conducted across-border raids at this point when intelligence was good enough to justify it. I would bet almost the farm that we have conducted covert operations inside the Pakistani border.
Then why is Al-Qaeda doing better now than it did under Afghanistan?
As you pointed out, they have a lot of help from the indigenous population there. It's a big haystack. It's a small needle that we're looking for. We have...
I'm not just talking about Osama bin Laden. I mean, to be clear, obviously I think that's a major problem, but I'm worried about this all of Al-Qaeda growing in Pakistan and possibly threatening a country that's far more powerful than Afghanistan ever was and has nuclear weapons. And I want to know what America is doing, if anything. I mean, if we're sending a few hundred troops in cross-border, I'm sure those are brave men and women doing their best. But if that's all we're doing, I don't think it's enough.
Well, Mark, again, we don't want to commit a conventional division or a conventional brigade or anything like that to that kind of warfare. It's just not something that those people are trained to do. It might
well, how about training the Pakistani army in counterinsurgency? Because my impression is that that's just not their priority right now.
Well, you know, the Pakistanis are mostly our friends, but they're not all the way our friends. We have a lot of diplomacy going on with the Pakistani government, with Musharraf. The one thing we don't want to do is jeopardize his seat of power, because as you have pointed out, they do have nuclear weapons, and if that becomes a wholly owned radical Islamic subsidiary of Iran or something like that, look out, turn out the lights, and we just don't want that to happen. So it's a very delicate situation, and we're looking for the right answer.
It is a delicate situation, but here's my point, Mike. We have devoted the farm. We have bet the farm. We have put every single last troop we have, and some we don't have, given that we're extending our tours of duty. We've used so many people in the military that, as you've pointed out, we don't have any anymore, so we have to pay Blackwater and other military contractors three, four, five times what the poor old private or even sergeant in the military gets. We have bet everything. Everything we own, and borrowed it and thrown our shirt on the craps table of Iraq, when real threats to American security exist. They're powerful. They're in Pakistan. They're in Afghanistan. They're in Iran. They're to some extent in Saudi Arabia and Egypt. And we went all out swatting this fly, which was Saddam Hussein, who I think by any stretch was far less dangerous than North Korea or Iran or Pakistan or Afghanistan or even Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Isn't it a mistake to bet the farm on this one country? I mean, George Bush says, if we leave Iraq now, Iraq will become a haven for Al-Qaeda and all this kind of very strong rhetoric, and yet Pakistan right now is becoming a haven for Al-Qaeda, and it's far more dangerous than Iraq ever was, and I don't hear the president talking about Pakistan very much.
Well, Mark, you know, when you talk about whether or not we should have bet the farm in Iraq, where you allege that we have, you can argue, and I'll be glad to argue with you any time as to whether or not we should have done that. You know, we've done this before, and I will argue that it was the right move, and you, of course, argue very eloquently that it was the wrong move. But the fact is, we sat down at the table, we anteed up, we got dealt the cards, we're halfway through the hand, and now we're playing with the cards that we have, and I don't think it's time to fold those cards yet.
I think it's time to move the cards.
I think we still have a viable role to play, and it's not time to fold the hand yet. And unlike the Democrats in Congress who want to fold the hand yesterday, I think we still got something viable going on, and I want to see it through.
I would say it's not a matter of folding a hand, but of redeploying assets to a place where they can best be used. Mike, we've got a few minutes left. George Bush apparently just a few minutes ago vetoed the S-CHIP, the State Children's Health Insurance Program, which had a strong bipartisan support, more than two-thirds in the Senate. It's going to be a close House vote. Apart from the question of what's going to happen, and we'll see, I mean, neither of us knows whether the 25, they'll get 25 more Republicans or not. Is this a real mistake for George Bush to veto? This program, whether 10 million Americans get health, children get health care, is clearly going to be a big issue in the November 2008 campaign. Was Bush wrong to veto the bill?
Well, Mark, in a political sense, he was dead wrong to veto it. In a substantive sense, he was correct to veto it. And I know we've just got a few minutes left, so let me say this quickly. You know, this bill expands what we used to have for S-CHIP, and it expands it in a very bad way. When you start allowing waivers up to 300% of the poverty level, when you start allowing people into the program who make $90,000 a year.
Oh, that's an exaggeration. You know it, Mike.
This is low-cost children's health care. This is now middle-class entitlement. And
now you're doing spin bites. Come on. You know that the only one that offered even over $80,000 was New York, and the Bush administration turned that down. I'm sure you realize that 70% or more of the people earn less than $40,000 a year.
And that's good. Let's keep it to those 70% and cut the other 30% out. You know, let's just make this a clean bill and make it the lower class children's health care bill that it should be. Now,
when we're spending all these billions on Iraq and on Blackwater, why is it so terrible that a few million American children who otherwise wouldn't get health care suddenly get health care? What is so wrong with that? This isn't even government-run health care. All this is government money going to private companies, the same ones that you like so much, making sure that children who would not otherwise be covered get health care. What is so wrong with that?
Mark, we don't want to start down the road of middle-class entitlements. It's a socialist program.
You mean like Social Security?
That we will regret for the next 100 years if we do it. Now, having said that, let me agree with you that the Democrats were very clever. They boxed the president into a very untenable situation. No matter what he did, he was going to be wrong, and he chose one wrong solution over another wrong solution. I think you are going to score strong political points at the ballot box next election as a result of what happened here.
Well, I hope so. And let me just, before we close, mention one other middle-class entitlement that you attack so much. It's called Social Security. Would America be better off without that too, Mike?
You know,
it's a middle class entitlement,
but I know it's not going to go away. I think
we would be better off without it. That's your position.
And start everybody who is under 30 in a private investment system, and anybody who's over 30, give them the option of going into it. The country would be much better off in 30 years. But that's not going to happen, and I'm not going to fight that battle with you today.
Well, Mike, one of the things I appreciate about you is you have fully drunk the Kool-Aid, and you're at least consistent. If you're going to attack universal health care, you go out and attack Social Security as well. That's why I like having you on the show. There are a few people actually willing to say those kinds of things on air. But I do thank you for coming on, Mike. I appreciate it very much, and we'll go at it again sometime.
My pleasure. Thank you. My best to your listeners.
That's it for the Inside Scoop. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush today, as expected, vetoed the bill, which would provide health insurance to more than 10 million children, up from the current 6.6 million. He said it moves the country's health care system, quote, in the wrong direction, end quote. It was the president's fourth veto while in office. Congress may pass legislation that closes a loophole which allows private security contractors in Iraq, such as Blackwater, to be immune to criminal prosecution. The private security forces protect State Department personnel in Iraq. The Polish ambassador to Iraq was wounded in an attack in central Baghdad today. His convoy was targeted by several bombs in what is being called an assassination attempt. Poland has about 1,000 troops in Iraq. According to a joint Six Nations statement, by the end of this year, North Korea has agreed to a deal to dismantle all of its nuclear facilities. In return, the communist government will receive 950,000 metric tons of fuel oil or economic aid. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will travel to the Middle East again next week ahead of the U.S.-hosted peace conference in November. She will go to Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and possibly other neighboring Arab countries. Former President Jimmy Carter was blocked from visiting a Darfur refugee camp by Sudanese forces. He got into a shouting match with them. Virginia Republican Senator John Warner is said to be doing well after a non-surgical procedure to regulate his heartbeat. The 80-year-old lawmaker will remain in the hospital overnight. He is expected to resume his Senate work next week. In Myanmar, a UN worker and three of her family members were taken in an early dawn government raid. It was part of the security crackdown against demonstrators. The Associated Press reports that next week the U.S. government will conduct the largest terrorism exercise so far. It will consist of three imaginary dirty bombs going off in two major U.S. cities and Guam. Investigators will try to determine how five workers were killed in a